we'll hear from Dan Jaffe and Alejandro Carrell about Oregon's budget.
The Oregon legislature began its 2019 session last week, and for the first time in many years, proposals to raise major new revenue in the form of corporate taxes and other sources are on the table and are being actively promoted by Governor Kate Brown and the Democratic legislators, who now have a 60% supermajority in both houses, allowing them to raise revenue without Republican votes, as well as a crop of more progressive legislators. However, a series of tax cuts and restrictions on raising new revenue promoted by corporate and right-wing interests since 1990, approved by voters and many enshrined in the state constitution, have gutted funding for everything from K-12 education and higher education to healthcare, mental health, and infrastructure over the past three decades. Combine this with new corporate tax breaks and increasing corporate tax avoidance, and you've got a major fiscal hole with very serious social consequences. So how are the governor and Democrats proposing to raise $2 to $3 billion per biennium for K-12 education, and what else is possible with a Democratic supermajority? And will that nearly be enough to meaningfully restore the harm caused by 28 years or 30 years of fiscal austerity? What do progressive and left groups, organized labor, organizations of communities of color and low-income communities want to see happen, and what's being left out of the discussion or ruled off the table entirely? To help us sort out these questions, my guest is Alejandro Carrell, the executive director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. It's a nonprofit research and analysis organization that works on issues of tax and budget fairness for low- and middle-income Oregonians. Welcome, Alejandro.
Thank you, Dan. It's great to be here.
So let's begin with a quick overview of the situation we're in. Very briefly, how would you describe the, or quantify, if you want, the social legacy of the last, say, three decades of structural underfunding of human needs in Oregon? How bad is the situation?
Yeah, the situation is, I think, has been, as you've said, accumulating over the last three or four decades. And it's resulted in a significant underinvestment on critical services for Oregonians, from K through 12 to education, through obviously higher education, as we've seen tuition levels continue to rise. There's housing shortages, a lack of investment in public infrastructure. So the need is broad and deep and has accumulated over these 30 or 40 years, resulting in what we now feel like it's a structural set of deficits that we seem to not be able to overcome. So there's a need for investing in this infrastructure and services in a way that it's actually distributing the burden, the tax burden, on those that can afford to pay more.
So very briefly, and we'll get into more details in a moment, what are the Oregon Center for Public Policy and your allies, other groups you're working with, what are you advocating for? What's your alternative vision? And maybe how does it differ from what the Democrats in the legislature are calling for?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that as a result of this underinvestment, we've seen growing inequality across the board. And so what we're proposing is really centered around three critical principles. First of all, we have to take an approach towards raising revenue that is progressive. In other words, asking those that can't pay more to actually do so. Secondly, it has to be obviously we have to be able to meet the needs. And so you mentioned, you know, the numbers being thrown around right now as $2 billion for K through 12 education. The Joint Committee on Student Success has come up with this rough figure, and the governor has mentioned it as well. So adequacy is really important. But top of all of those, and top of progressivity, is this notion of equity, because we have to recognize that over the last, you know, over 150 years, we have put in place policies that at their core are racist and have created this deep inequities, not just in terms of income, but in terms of accumulation of wealth over time. So this is an opportunity now to begin to correct the cycle, to correct these policies, so that we can come up with a set of proposals that actually will have a long shelf life.
Okay, and in terms of the sort of the issues of justice and distribution in the source of revenue, let's talk. I know that your organization spends a lot of time researching and talking about the fall in the share of total state revenue that comes from corporations and corporate taxes. Can you talk briefly about what's happened, say, over the last few decades in the corporate tax realm?
Yeah, unfortunately, corporate taxes in Oregon have been actually decreasing as a source of all income collected by the state, all income taxes collected by the state. So, you know, just about 20 years ago, that level was about 18, almost 19% of all income taxes collected were paid for by corporations. And as of 2015, that number is about 7%. So it's a pretty significant decrease in terms of what corporations in our state are contributing to the common good.
And what are the sort of vectors by which that's happened? How has that share dropped so dramatically? What are the various causes?
Well, there's been a number of changes in policy that have given corporations ways out of paying their fair share. One of them, for example, is that we've changed how corporations report their profits to the state and therefore what is the tax base upon which they can be taxed. So, and you have probably, you know, followed the news reporting on the Oregonian about how Nike, for example, has actually shifted billions of dollars in profit to subsidiaries abroad that actually don't even have employees in an effort to avoid their tax liability in the state. And so what the Oregon Center for Public Policy, along with a fairly large coalition of nonprofit organizations, have proposed to address this issue is to enact what is called complete reporting, upon which corporations would have to report all of their profits globally, and their tax base for Oregon would be determined on the sales of the portion of the sales that are attributed to the state of Oregon. And so that would create a much broader tax base upon which tax corporations.
So it sounds like some of the fall in corporate taxes is an artifact of global changes in the financial sector and the financial world and how corporations are managing to hide profits offshore, and that the state law is not necessarily kept up with it. But we also have a string of special tax deals that have been brokered by a series of Democratic governors, actually, with some of the very largest corporations in Oregon, Intel, Nike, Comcast, to specifically reduce their tax bills, either in response to the threat to leave or the threat to not create jobs here. How significant a contributor are those sorts of sweetheart deals?
Well, they're no doubt very significant aspect of the story that has led us to this point. And that is the reality of the political system that we have in the United States, in which corporations can contribute to political campaigns without really any kind of limitation. And so that's created a dependency between elected officials and corporate interests that is difficult to tease apart. I do think that this is when the voice of the people is even more important, because ultimately the voters do have a say in this. So I don't want to give the impression that it's all controlled by corporations, but there's no doubt that when you look at the history of the legislature and past governors, as you've mentioned, we've given a number of tax breaks, created an incredible number of tax loopholes for corporations that have resulted in where we are today.
So corporate taxes is sort of one side of what I sometimes think of as the kind of fiscal straitjacket, if you will, that Oregon is in, some of the structural restrictions on raising the revenue necessary to perform the basic functions of having a robust public sector and serving human needs. And I think the other side, though, is some of the things that voters have actually weighed in on and enacted over the last decades. And that has to do with the property tax side of things, the series of laws passed in the 90s and the 2000s that enshrine property tax caps and compression in the state constitution, measures 5 and 50, the kicker refund that gives back excesses when the state economists don't estimate the budget correctly, rather than reserving those revenues for spending needs, they give them back in tax refunds, and the supermajority requirement that requires legislators to have 60% majority to raise any new revenue. Of course, it doesn't require 60% to cut revenue. Talk a little bit about that side of the equation and perhaps the income tax side as well.
Well, there's no doubt that, again, so we have on the one side these corporate interests that have the ability to allocate significant resources to either political campaigns for officials or in the context of ballot measures. And so both of those forces have an impact on how Oregon shapes policy. Obviously, both of those processes could be influenced by participation of people to influence those policies. But ultimately, ultimately, what we have is a legislature that is thinking about, especially when it comes to revenue measures, thinking about how those policies that they're enacting during the legislative session will play out with voters during a ballot challenge. And of course, in the ballot challenge, as we've seen, every election cycle seems to have a higher and higher, higher price tag. And so corporations become the ultimate players in shaping those policies. So we have both the opportunity here to influence policy because of, you have, as you mentioned, two supermajorities in the state and the House with a governor, a Democrat governor, that I think is aligned with our progressive values. But this is the opportunity where we need to be able to hold those elected officials accountable.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alejandro Queral. He's the executive director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And we're talking about the possibilities for major revenue reform and increasing new revenue in the 2019 Oregon legislative session and some of the barriers to doing that. Before we get into sort of some of your proposals for raising new revenue and the specifics, the nuts and bolts, I do want to just talk for at least a minute about the idea of austerity, the notion of austerity, which, you know, I think in many ways you could think of as sort of the main trick of neoliberalism in a way, these ideas that circulate that seem to sort of become part of the common sense that we have to live within our means, that if revenue falls due to, say, an economic downturn, we've got to cut, we've got to do more with less, or we're broke and we can't raise revenue. And that obviously ignores a lot of the options available to governments to raise revenue. One political party is almost entirely unwilling to raise taxes, but I guess I'm curious to hear your thoughts on these ideas of austerity and how they have influenced the ability to fund human needs here in Oregon.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that politics, especially nowadays, has moved away from facts and has turned into a series of talking points that become part of the narrative. You know, it's sort of this notion of truthiness. If you repeat something that's not true over time, they sort of becomes true. And that's what's happened, these notions of austerity, of cutting budget, of cutting services, or the notion that corporations are going to leave when we increase taxes or change the favoritism that we've afforded them for over the last, you know, two or three decades. Those are false narratives. Our organization, Oregon Center for Public Policy, dwells on the facts. In fact, our motto is because facts matter, and facts matter more than ever now, because that's the only place where we can make sound and rational decisions around our policy. It cannot be about narrative. So looking at corporations and their decisions to stay in a place really have more to do with the quality of infrastructure, the quality of the transportation, their quality of education, having a skilled workforce, than whether they're being taxed or not in and of itself. And so let's move away from these narratives and let's dwell on the facts.
Okay, great. And on that note, let's turn then to specifically what OCPP and your allies are calling for in terms of ways to raise this new revenue. You're part of what's been called a revenue roundtable, a series of labor and other progressive groups, and you proposed a series of particular revenue or tax proposals. Talk about what's in there and what you're calling for.
Well, it's,
and if possible, how much those proposals would raise.
Absolutely. As I mentioned before, you know, we are part of, or you've mentioned before, we are part of this revenue roundtable that is a fairly large coalition of progressive groups representing low-income communities, communities of color, rural communities as well, and small businesses. And we all share the notion that this is an opportunity to correct some of the wrongs that the legislature has enacted over time to focus on corporate tax reform. As I mentioned earlier, complete reporting, where corporations would be required to report of their complete profits abroad and in the U.S. In the U.S. But we also have to look at the corporate income tax and the corporate minimum tax. Corporate minimum tax right now, it's $150 for corporations making up to a certain point. We need to change that in order to be able to raise the revenue that we need to invest in education. So in terms of corporate income tax, we may be able, depending on how we structure the policy, ensuring that it's a progressive policy, that it doesn't have a major impact on low-income communities, that then we look at, you know, potentially raising up to $1 billion. With a corporate minimum tax reform, we could potentially raise around $300+ million, depending on how we structure that. And much of this has to do with, again, you know, the notion of complete reporting and what corporations are reporting to the state of Oregon as to what is their tax base. So those are critical places to start. The legislature, I think, will be looking very closely. There's a number of legislators that have introduced a number of bills related to corporate tax. And so it'll be an interesting debate moving into the legislative session. session, but we hope to be able to inform this debate in ensuring that legislators stay true to the values of progressivity, adequacy, and equity.
And then moving beyond the corporate tax rate and eliminating some of these problematic practices like not taxing the entire revenue, what else are you calling for? I see some proposals here in personal income taxes, in commercial and industrial taxes. Talk a little bit about what else is on your agenda.
Yeah, there are a number of other things that we are considering, what we call complementary taxes. So, you know, sure, certainly there's property taxes that we could be looking at. The political environment doesn't seem to be ripe enough to have a conversation of property taxes because it has a whole bunch of other implications, potentially needed changes to the Oregon Constitution. But yes, I mean, absolutely, everything has to be on the table, including personal income taxes. We have continued, as I mentioned earlier, continued to see a significant disparity in terms of income. You know, in 1980, the top 1% was making a pretty significant, they have increased the level of income significantly more than folks that are median income levels, which basically, you know, those income levels have stayed flat. So we have to correct those as well. But again, we are playing within a political environment, and where we're seeing more movement and more interest at this point is on the corporate tax reform. So we'll see what happens there, but there's a whole host of other complementary proposals that we are talking about and educating legislators about, and I would invite our listeners to look at what we're proposing on our website, occpp.org.
And you had also talked with me earlier about proposals to change the earned income tax credit. This is in the personal income tax realm.
And that's a critical element of what, not just necessarily this revenue roundtable, there's another coalition of organizations that are moving or trying to move the earned income tax credit. And that we're talking about here is a state match of the federal earned income tax credit. What that does is currently we are at 8% if you are a working individual within certain parameters. If you have children under 3, you get 11% match of that federal earned income tax credit. What we're proposing is increasing it a pretty significant amount. We need to renew it first because it expires or sunsets in 2020, and then we will propose to increase it. That's going to bring a lot of federal dollars to Oregon from Washington, D.C., and we'll be able to take care of low-income families that are working.
Okay, and before we wrap up, what do you see as being, you talked about the politically possible, what's being left out of the discussion or ruled off the table entirely at the moment, even with this Democratic supermajority in the Oregon legislature? What's being sort of framed as politically impractical or too much to ask, and how does that square with your vision of a truly progressive, equitable, and robust public sector?
Well, you know, it depends on who you talk to. And I think that there's a sector of legislators that are very interested in doing a whole bunch. And then there's limitations in terms of what the leadership is saying. So, yeah, I mean, we would love to see our whole revenue package moved forward. But what we consider realistic is really around corporate taxes.
And how can listeners get involved in supporting OCPP's agenda and the vision you've outlined? Where can they go to find out more?
Go to our website, occpp.org. We have a newsletter, and we provide updates regularly, particularly during legislative session.
Great. I've been talking with Alejandro Queral, the executive director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy, about tax and revenue politics in the Oregon legislature in 2019. Thanks so much, Alejandro, for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure.
Money. When you haven't any coal in your stove and you freeze in the winter and you curse to the wind that you fate. When you haven't any shoes on your feet, your coat's thin as paper and you look 30 pounds underweight. When you go to get a word of advice from the fat little pastor, he will tell you to love evermore. But when hunger comes to rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat at the window. At the window.
Who's there?
Hunger.
Oh, hunger.
See how love flies out the door. Money makes a bird go round the bird, go round the bird. Money makes a bird go round the clinking, clanking, slam.